Well, today, for the presentation, we have a different sort of presentation than maybe some of you were expecting. The presentation today was going to be opening of the time capsule, but it was decided there were problems going to be associated with doing that at this date, so Ingrid Alsich, a longtime member of the fellowship, is going to be making the presentation today. And you may have noticed the title in the bulletin, From Dancing Bears to War Zones and Picking Up the Pieces in the Balkans. Well, what a title, hey? Anyway, we're really happy that Ingrid was so generous as to agree to take the service, do the presentation today. Ingrid has been a member of the Regina Unitarian Fellowship since 1975. She was born in Egypt of European parents, mother Danish and Huguenot, and father Maltese and Yugoslavian, Montenegrin. The family escaped from the turmoil in Egypt when the Egyptians decided to gain control back from the European capitalists in their country. European districts were being burned to the ground in Cairo and elsewhere, and Europeans were being killed in the streets. The family moved to Australia in 1952, when Ingrid was only 3. Australia was therefore her place of education and early socio-political development until she was 24 years old. Then in 1973, Ingrid, a dental therapist trained in Tasmania, Australia, was offered a job in Regina under the Blakeney NDP government to help set up the Saskatchewan school-based free dental programs. Ingrid became heavily involved in the NDP party and in environmental, human justice, and women's movements in the 70s and onward. She went to Trent University in Ontario after 6 years of teaching in the dental program, and she gained her Bachelor of Science in Environmental Sciences and Ecology. After that, she completed a Bachelor of Education at the University of Regina and has been a teacher at SIAST in both academic and ESL programs for 28 years. The title of her presentation, From Dancing Bears to War Zones and Picking Up the Pieces in the Balkans, arises from Ingrid's 15-day tour in the Balkans with a British company called Intrepid Traveler. This tour was part of a 32-day European trip this past summer, but it was chosen for its historical interest and family origins. So the presentation that Ingrid is going to do today will help us understand a different part of the world, a part of the world we often hear in the news, and shed some light on that. Thanks, Ingrid. Do you want this moved over a little bit?
Oops, it's taking a long time. Oh, here we go. I might have to stand down here, I think. Oops. Oops. Sorry, I'm a little nervous because I was up till late last night getting the photos done and doing the getting things ready, and then everything kind of went awry, so I'm a little nervous. hoping that you can see that, and so that describes the Balkans, depicts them. So right now, Croatia, Bosnia Herzegovina, and Serbia and Montenegro, those were the areas that we went to on the trip with Intrepid Traveler. And Slovenia and Macedonia were given sort of early independence before the Balkan War broke out. So they weren't. There was some fighting in Slovenia, but there was no fighting in Macedonia, and Slovenia became independent quite quickly without a lot of warfare. Just a little map of where we went. So we started in Budapest, and we went to a place called, it's pronounced Osijek, and that is actually in Croatia. This is not a great map because the big writing here is going right across Croatia. But Osijek is right near the border of Serbia and Croatia. So that was our first place. And then Novi Sad is right in Serbia. And Belgrade, of course, is the capital of Serbia. And then we went to Sarajevo in Bosnia. And then we did a side trip to Mostar and then into Montenegro. And saw a beautiful and stayed at this wonderful monastery in Ostrog. And very mountainous, of course. Montenegro means black mountains. And then we went to Kotor in Montenegro, which is where my grandfather was born. And I was trying to do a little research on the family there. And then to Dubrovnik, people can't see, which is back in Croatia. But it's very different to the rest of Croatia because it's on the Adriatic coast. So Italy is over here, right? So Italy has a lot of influence over these coastal, like there's a lot of interchange of cultures because there are ferries going across. So they're very different over here, and there wasn't as much warfare over this side, although Dubrovnik was bombed by the Serbs briefly. And so was the old part of town. Suffered some damage, which the international community immediately helped with. So maybe I'll leave the map up for a moment. Okay. So I went from July 7th to July 20th, and it was called the Balkan Adventure. I was on a family tour, if you like. I was in Finland first to see niece and nephew and for a week, and then I went to the Balkans, and then I went back to Denmark to see my cousins. So this was sort of a separate trip, though, from seeing family. There were only 12 people on the tour, and what I like about this company, I had gone to Turkey with them before, is that they keep the numbers small, and you take public transit, and you stay at simple places like B&Bs, but they know where to go. And they take you to really interesting restaurants and so forth, so you get a real sense of the local culture. So you're not in glitzy American hotels, and you're actually experiencing some of the cultural. And, of course, we go to historical sites and eco sites. While we were there, though, they had the worst heat wave on record in the Balkans. One of the reasons I went there, too, was I thought, oh, it'll be cooler, because Greece and Italy and so forth can go up to like 45 degrees, and it's just awful in the summer. But it wasn't. It was like 36, 37, 38 every single day of the 15 days that I was on this tour. So we were having a lot of trouble keeping cool and keeping blisters off our feet. So they hadn't had rain for 8 weeks. The whole area has, except for Montenegro, has a lot of agriculture. I haven't had a chance to do a little more research to find out exactly what the proportion of agricultural land is, but at least where we went, it looked like wonderful agricultural land and huge crops everywhere. And apparently they grow something like 20% of the sunflower oil for the whole world, which is amazing for such a small area. And they also grow a lot of corn and many specialized vegetables and so forth. So it seems like a huge rural population. And so, I entitled it From Dancing Bears to war zones, because I started, after I left my niece and nephew in Finland, I went to St. Petersburg. And of course, Yugoslavia ended up being a communist country from 1944 on. And they actually denied Soviet control. But I did want to show you the dancing bears in Russia. So, these are the dancing bears in a square near the Hermitage in St. Petersburg. And so, of course, they represent, you know, the bear, Russia, and all of the influence of the Soviet bloc at one time. And, of course, that all fell apart, too. But those, many countries actually designed a bear. And so if I just want to go forward. Okay, so these are, I think, Argentina, and I can't remember what the other one is. And so they all had different designs, and somehow the one from Canada is not there. It was supposed to be right after. Maybe it's after this. No? These are out of order again. Sorry. That's what happened last night. The computer put them all out of order, so now I'm in trouble. But I'll do the best I can. I'm sorry. So there's one from Canada, which we'll come across soon, and it's all blue, just blue squares and a few beige squares. So I thought it's the conservative bear, which is what we would have under a Harper government. This is actually the political museum in St. Petersburg, and this is one of the carpets that was actually on the ceiling, and it was a propaganda carpet for the Soviet Union at the time and under Stalin, and now we've suddenly gone back to Budapest, which is where it started. But I'm going to start the history here, because that will make it, put it into some context, why I'm starting with Budapest. And maybe I'll stand up here, because this will just stay on for a little while. Okay, just to give you a little bit of history of the region of the Balkans, the Romans controlled the area from 148 BC to about 500 AD. The Slavs, largely from what is now known as the Ukraine, invaded, bringing the Orthodox religion, which became the Greek Orthodox Church in that area. And they occupied the area from 500 AD to the 1300s. This was the time, at the 1300s, was when the Ottomans came, the Turkish Ottomans, with their Muslim religion, and they took over the area, and they had a bigger stronghold in the area that we now know as Bosnia and Herzegovina. In the 1800s, the people of the Balkans formed an alliance and sought independence from the Turkish Empire. There was a lot of torment and so forth, which I didn't want to go into a lot of detail, because we do only have 20 minutes. But the Turkish Empire was in a state of crumbling at that time, so the Balkans united and were assisted by the Austro-Hungarian Empire, who then had a very strong influence in the area. So then you had the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, established. So you've got the Greek Orthodox Church very strongly established in Serbia, Montenegro, and to some extent in Croatia, to some extent in Bosnia. But Croatia, because it's closer to Austria, is actually mostly Roman Catholic. And then in Bosnia, that's where the Turkish Empire maintained more of a stronghold. So you've got more Muslim people there in Bosnia-Herzegovina. So the Blue Danube is another geographical feature that is important to think about, because it runs right through Serbia in particular, although also on the fringes of... Sorry, I have to go back here. Oh, how do I make it bigger? Yeah? Oh, there we go, the slide. Thank you. It's great, Joanne, that you up. You're very helpful. Now, of course, it blurs it a bit, but... This is the Black Sea, And this is Germany. So historically, it was a major trade route. And so in Serbia, I'm going to have to reduce it a bit. In Belgrade, it meets right at Belgrade with another major river. So the Serbians had control of the major trade route for many, many centuries. And so Serbia was a more powerful area than the rest of the Balkans. But the Austro-Hungarians, of course, were pleased to have more control of the Blue Danube, too, in the 1800s. Let's see, where are we now? During World War II, we're jumping a little bit ahead, the German Nazis were able to get cooperation from a group of Croatians, mostly Roman Catholic, to clear a path for Hitler. They formed a Nazi administration, the Ustasi, and they organized ethnic cleansing and concentration camps filled with Serbs, Jews, homosexuals, and political opponents. The Ustasi expelled a third of the 2 million Serbs out of Croatia, slaughtered another third, and were able to get another third to agree to convert to Catholicism. So it's really important to understand that context and why everything started falling apart later, like because it was in people's living history. Many Jews escaped from eastern Croatia to the Dalmatian coast, where some areas were controlled by the Italians. These communities provided sanctuary to the Jews, even under Mussolini, because they were further away geographically. Mussolini had enough in the mainland of Italy to deal with, particularly in Montenegro and in a place called Split in Croatia. In Bosnia, Muslims were coerced into helping Croats round up Serbs and Jews for mass murder. Thousands of Jews from Bosnia and Serbia tried to escape, but were stopped at the Romanian border at Sabac and murdered by the thousands. After the Nazi occupation, many people opposed to Hitler and friends or relatives of so many who were killed, expelled or raped in camps, joined revolutionary movements that were sweeping across Europe. Their aim was to combine liberation with a new socialist order. This is when Marshal Josip Broz Tito came to power as leader of this new socialist order. Then it became Yugoslavia in 1945. Tito was born in Croatia, but of a Slavic mother and educated in Slovenia. Tito became the leader of the new coalition of independent states in 1945 and remained the leader until he died in 1980. So that was a long time, 35 years. The Federation, the new Yugoslavia, embraced six republics: Serbia, Croatia, Slovenia, Montenegro, Macedonia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Let's go back to the map. Takes a long time to load, huh? Tito refused to allow the Soviet bloc to control the kind of communism or socialism that was going to develop in Yugoslavia. So Stalin expelled Yugoslavia from the communist bloc in 1944. Tito and his council of six leaders from each republic took control of industry, outlawed other political parties, conducted anti-religious campaigns, but refused to nationalize agriculture. Each industry was democratized by organizing worker co-ops. So all the industries were had committees that were elected by the workers, and they had engineers and finance people and so forth on these committees. And they actually asked the workers how they should change things right at the front lines that would improve production. They would ask for innovative ideas to produce something new and so forth. And so eventually in the 50s and 60s, Yugoslavia became a very thriving economy, and they were self-sustaining because they have such large agricultural resources that they were able to produce enough food for their population and excess for trade. They also, Tito also and his six counselors also invited Western countries to trade with them, which was also very unusual for a communist country. So they were a very different style. And let's see. Tito cultivated a socialist fraternity and interdependence of the republics because he knew there were so many hostilities for so many reasons that had been going on for so many years in that region. So what he tried to do was to hold the whole, all the different factions together by focusing more on how they needed to be interdependent, how they needed to support each other, and all of this should take precedence over ethnic differences. He was very successful in this. He organized a national army based in Serbia, but where he ensured there was a detailed mix of trainees from each of the factions. This he hoped would bring a unity of purpose and understanding and a new camaraderie amongst the troops based upon a national identity rather than their own individual areas. Tito also became one of the founders of the non-aligned movement in the world, which consisted of 120 countries. Egypt, Indonesia, and India were founding members also, and the first declaration of their formation was in Belgrade in 1961. This was a reaction to the threats to peace that the Cold War posed internationally. Tito refused alliances with either the Western capitalists or the communist bloc. He was revered by all the factions of Yugoslavia and became known as the Father. He was apparently very humble, so that when people wanted to proclaim his birthday as a national holiday, he asked that it be proclaimed Youth Day. After the Balkan War in the year 2000, and after all the ravages and killings between Muslims, Serbs, and Croats, when some lobbied to change the name of Tito Avenue in Sarajevo, there were demonstrations in the streets to keep the name of Tito. Unfortunately, Tito did not groom someone worthy to take his place, so that soon after he died in 1980, rifts began to emerge within the remaining Council of Six. Hostilities from World War II remained in people's living memory and emerged as acts of brutality and skirmishes sparked in neighborhoods across most of Croatia, Serbia, and Bosnia Herzegovina. Croatia was first to want independence in 1991. The Serbs who lived at the border near Osijek did not want to break away, and they wanted to maintain Yugoslavia because they didn't want to break away from, and were living in, from Serbia and Yugoslavia, and were living in Croatia. Many were killed and others were expelled, so it's sort of a repeat of what had happened years before. The Serbian army moved in, not only to protect the Serbs in Croatia, but also to stop the move to independence. So that Osijek was one of the major spots of the fighting, because there was a big arms base there. And so a lot of fighting, particularly across the river where we swam. I'll show you the photos soon. In 1992, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Macedonia, and Slovenia declared independence. Slovenia and Macedonia became independent without a civil war. Bosnia, Herzegovina was much more complicated. Croats killed thousands of Muslims at Mostar, which is one of the places we went, and maybe some of you have heard of the Mostar Bridge. It's kind of an ancient bridge that the Turks built out of marble blocks, and it was bombed and completely collapsed. And this is also where the ethnic cleansing was taking place, in Herzegovina. Serbs were being killed or expelled with their property rights being taken away in Bosnia. two Croatian military generals are before the International Court for Military Crimes. And I don't remember hearing about this in our media. I don't know, maybe some other people did, but I heard mostly about how the Serbs were mainly at fault with all of this. Some Serbs claimed allegiance to the Bosnian army and independence forces, and they actually fought against the Serbian army. The Serbian army moved in and surrounded Sarajevo for 6 long years. Sarajevo is situated in the bottom of a river valley surrounded by mountains. Water supplies from mountain springs, food, and fuel supplies were cut off from entering the valley, and there was constant mortar and sniper fire in both directions. And that's, I think, a lot of what we saw on the news during that time, between 1993 and 1999. The NATO forces did not interfere in the city, but took over the airport so that neither side could use airspace to bomb the other. To add to the horrors, all sides set up rape camps where an estimated 20 to 50,000 Bosnian women suffered this brutality. Finally, Serbia was defeated in Kosovo and other areas and then withdrew from Bosnia and Herzegovina. Milosevic stepped down as Serbian leader, and I think most people know what happened to him. And in 2003, Serbia remained as a separate republic with Montenegro. 2 years later, Montenegro declared independence from Serbia and was also never involved in the conflicts. Many mountain ranges separate Montenegro from the rest of former Yugoslavia, and their ties to the Italians on the Dalmatian coast are historically sound. So moving on to picking up the pieces. In 2012, Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia suffered and suffer 30% to 40% unemployment. They struggle to maintain some kind of self-sufficiency in agricultural production. We ate mostly just what was available from the fields. Like, for days and days, all we ate were green peppers. The corn wasn't ready yet. I'm trying to think, what else do we have? I don't think we saw a tomato yet. We saw tomatoes towards the end of the trip. And so green and red peppers were the main vegetable. I didn't see a carrot the whole trip, so I don't know why carrots weren't, because they're usually not that late. And then we ate wild deer, some pork, and there was some goat's cheese, but really there was not a lot of diversity. You just wouldn't have, in terms of fruit, oh, there were lots of plums, so everything in the stone fruit area, plums and apricots, and they were delicious. So, but many people, my guess is that they're struggling to survive. And many of the big multinational companies from England and the United States and other parts of Europe are setting up shop. And so, you know, they're basically losing control of their own economy. They struggle to maintain some kind of self-sufficiency in agricultural production, but they no longer have the industrial networks either. Because of all the hostilities, they're not really trading with each other, and there's like heavy border patrol. So every time we had to cross a border, we'd be there for a long time, and they would be checking all of our passports. I was a little nervous because my name is actually Montenegrin, and so I thought there might be some hostility against me because I worry too much. Each republic is vying for membership with the European Common Market. To qualify, they must have a common standard of respecting rights. This includes acceptance of a pluralistic society. And what's unfortunate, and we had 3 tour guides, you know, one in Croatia, one in Serbia, and one in Bosnia. And all of them were concerned that hostilities were being maintained because all of the schools are kept separate. So you've got, you know, the Greek Orthodox schools, the Catholic schools, and the Muslim schools. So it wasn't just religion, but it was a pretty major part of it, because the communists also tried to shut down religion, right? Also in terms of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer groups, they do not have automatic freedoms, which under the to join the European Common Market, they actually have to show and respect the rights of LGBTQ people as well. And while I was there in Hungary, there was the taxi that was taking me in from the airport to my B&B in Budapest got stuck and was surrounded by crowds and traffic and then blocked by these huge barricades. And there was a Pride demo, I guess, that day, because I asked him what was going on. And he said, oh, the police are protecting the demonstrators. And I said, from what? And he said, the Black Shirts. So the Black Shirts are this fascist organization in Hungary, and similar organizations exist right across the Balkans. And they were out with baseball bats to go and beat up the people in the Pride. But, you know, here, the Black Shirts would not be allowed to do that. They would be arrested from uttering threats before they even started, you know. So that was a pretty scary start. There have been bans and cancellations of gay pride marches. And following violence during a gay pride march in Belgrade, Serbia in 2010, local authorities banned the 2011 gay pride march. No gay pride marches have ever been organized in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Macedonia or Kosovo. And Bosnia really wants to be part of the common market. So they have, I think, a long way to go, because even the intolerance of each other is still there. Okay, so maybe what I'll do now is just turn to my photos and then... Okay, so this is in Budapest. So they have the Turkish baths. And I'd like to sit down, but I can't. Okay. Which are very beautiful. And it was so hot that day. It was about 39 degrees. So now in Osijek, that's one of the buildings that hasn't been renovated and still has mortar damage and bullet damage. And another building, you can see the bullet holes and some mortar damage. And this is the river, and the River Brava, and it was, 39 degrees that day, so quite a lot of us went swimming, and it was such a relief. But it was weird swimming there because we were thinking about the Serbians were on this side firing mortar and shells, mortar shells across and hitting the downtown area of Osijek. And, of course, the firing was going both ways. This is the group I was with, and we're in a small Croatian restaurant. This is where the Catholic Church in a small town near Osijek. And I chose it because it's got this gruesome painting of St. John the Baptist, who had been beheaded, and I couldn't remember who had actually beheaded him. So I asked Sandra Blenkinsop, and she said, the bad guys, and I agreed with her. Sorry, I don't know the Bible very well. This is at an eco park, and I thought that was showed some humor, to beware of frogs. There weren't many because it was too dry. They hadn't had rain for 8 weeks. This is Tito's summer house, not too far out of Osijek. Now, this is the eco farm that we went to, and we had terrible fish there. We were served this fish from the river, and it's one of those bottom-feeding fish, like catfish, and all muddy and yuck, and it was way too salty. So, but the green peppers were nice. Oh, and they had some cabbage, I think. And then lots of very, very strong liqueur and wine that they make out of plums and things. So we were pretty blasted after we left there. And here is one of the many, many fields of sunflowers, but they're dying in the fields because they haven't had rain for so long. So it was very sad, actually. That day, I think, was 40 degrees. These are the free-range chickens on the eco farm. The pigs. The goats. Now we're in a hospital in Verkhovich, and Verkhovich was bombed or shelled by the Serbians. And the guide there actually told us to take the stories with a little grain of salt, because there's a claim that the Serbians went in, took all the patients, and took them out into a field and murdered them. So apparently there isn't absolute evidence for that. So I don't know if it's true or not, but certainly we were told about that. And so this was a model for the kind of they built a museum in the basement of the hospital for tourists, and so shows how they sandbagged all the windows, and then that shows where a bomb came through the roof, right down through to the basement. And this is a lovely market, of course. Oh yes, so here you can see what's available. Actually, we didn't have a lot of eggplant, but yeah, lots of squash and lots of cabbage and green peppers. Some more. And lovely flowers. Yeah, all right, watermelon, which we fed to horses at one place. So this is the memorial where the people were supposed to have been killed out in the fields from the hospital. And I have not had time to look up what those flags represent. This was a winery that we went to. And it's a very old, established Yugoslavian winery in Croatia. And of course, we had to taste. And here where babies come from. And this is the stork nest on top of a telephone pole in the small town. So I'd never seen storks in their nest. So now we're actually in Serbia in a little place called Novi Sad. And it looked like it was thriving. I'm not sure why. And we went to a honey production and winery farm. And a doctor owned this place many years ago, and he had been ill and had been told he had to get out in the country. So he took an interest in bees and invented new hives. So these old hives, apparently they had to kill all the bees to get the honey. But with these hives that he developed a long time ago, I don't remember the dates, you didn't have to kill the bees. You could slide out those, you know, the honeycombs. Okay, Novi Sad. And there was a big music festival happening that night. But as you can see, Tuborg is there from Denmark. I can't see any other multinationals there, but they were there. Now, this is in Belgrade and just the old fortress. This is the Blue Danube here and the Sava River. And we're overlooking that from the fortress walls in Belgrade, Serbia. This was a restaurant, the name of which was ? They couldn't decide what to call it, so they called it ? And actually the food was fantastic. We had sort of moussaka-like food there, and it was very Greek for some reason. This is at the Tito Museum. So it's kind of a historical museum of old Yugoslavia. And so it shows you the production lines in the industries. And here too, they made their own cars, all of their appliances. And this, I don't know that we've got time to read all that. It's basically describing how they were, you know, the economy was thriving and people all had jobs and enough food and so forth. And women were treated equally in all fields, you know, in the scientific and technological fields under the communist regime. I mean, who knows personally if that was true. Then they were sort of looking forward. They had dreams of, you know, nuclear power plants and sending astronauts into space and all of the thing before Tito died. So this is just a small history from the museum, yeah. And I just thought this was an interesting photo because it's a Muslim woman in the Tito Museum, and this is the Yugoslav army, a photograph under, you know, the days when they were thriving. This is the entrance to the Tito Museum in Belgrade. And he received many gifts from many countries, and what he did was he set up a museum so that the population could enjoy the gifts, and they represented so many cultures. So he was trying to promote multiculturalism. Now we're in Sarajevo, and this is a carpet shop. So as you can see, the Turkish influence there in Bosnia. And this is the corner in Sarajevo where the Archduke Ferdinand was shot in 1914? He was shot. It was sort of the final incident before World War I started. And here's another street in Sarajevo. And this is, I think Astra is a British company. And this is our tour guide, the intrepid traveler tour guide, Daniel. So we were at a restaurant, as you can see, it was hot. Then we were on a train going to Mostar. Beautiful scenery. Can't imagine people killing each other there, but this is mortar damage in Mostar. Now we're back in Sarajevo. These are mixed up, sorry. This is the old part of Sarajevo, so this is probably from the 1400s. This is Mostar, the Mostar Bridge, and Turkey actually came in after the Balkan War and rebuilt the bridge to its original specifications with marble blocks. So we went across that bridge to the other side, to the old village. And on this side are the Muslim population mostly, and on this side is mostly the many Croats. And so there's still sort of hostility there. This is where the Croats blew up the bridge and actually were killing Muslims. So that's the Muslim side. Not as wealthy as the Croatian side. This is the entrance to the tunnel which the Bosnians built under the airport. So this was their secret place where they actually entered the beginning of the tunnel that they dug right under the airport to get supplies in because they were, of course, desperate. And many people are starving, and it was really hard to get water because when they went to get water from the beer plant, which was the only place they could get fresh spring water down in the valley, and the beer plant had its own water supply. So that's where they had to go. It was on one of the main streets downtown. And, of course, when people tried to get water, they'd get shot with sniper fire. So it was very difficult. So this just is the map of that area. And the Serbs were stationed, as you can see all these tanks here, they were stationed all the way around Sarajevo. And they built this tunnel. Does it show where the tunnel went? Maybe this is it here? I think so, yeah. So it went to a point where at least they could smuggle in supplies, and they even built a fuel line and a water line in that came through this tunnel into that area so people could get supplies safely. So this is the size of the tunnel. I had to bend over. So you can imagine having to carry something. I can't remember the length of it. I wish I could. But I think it was at least 3 kilometers long. So having to carry something and bending way over like that would be quite horrendous, I would think. This is just, I just noticed there were some Arabic people coming out of the mosque, and I was curious where they might be from. And now we're actually on our way to Montenegro, and the roads in Bosnia are really bad. This bus was huge, and I'm sure one of the wheels was right on this edge. And cars would have to back up if they came and find a little spot to tuck in to some trees so that we could get past. Oh, sorry. That's because I put my foot up. So this is just the scenery on the way to Montenegro. And now we're in Montenegro. It's a very wealthy state. Tourism is huge in Montenegro. And it doesn't have a very big population. Kotor, where we ended up, This is just some of the farmland. It doesn't look as rich, actually, as the farmland in the rest of Yugoslavia. And now we're at the monastery and at Ostrog. And this is the rocky path that we went up. That day it was about 39 degrees. And these are mixed up. These are the Black Mountains on our way to Kotor on the coast. And now we're in Kotor, and this is the one of the Greek Orthodox churches, very ornate. This is one of the old town streets where we actually, our B&B was right in the old town. The old fortress, and actually this fortress wall goes way up the mountain, and I did not climb it. It was too hot. Cruise ships come in there carrying like 1,000 passengers, and the population of Kotor is about 1,400 people, and they're trying to provide services to all these cruise ships coming in, which is a little crazy. And this is the beach, and it was lovely to swim. Fresh fish was wonderful, and zucchini with cheese on top. Different vegetables. So this is the harbor of Kotor. More Kotor. Now we're in Dubrovnik, and we're on the we're looking at the old town inside the fortress walls, and it's a very, very beautiful city, but it's constant climbing and going down. So this is the main square in the old part of town. A lot of this was heavily bombed, but the international community came in with lots of money. It's now a World Heritage Site, and it's been fixed up. It was mostly roof damage, because I think they used a ship and were bombing from a ship. It's a very expensive place to go. Now, this is a cafe built on the cliff, and a lot of young people were jumping off into the water and swimming. And then there were these kayaks. I thought it was a colorful. This is our intrepid traveler leader. And we had to stop halfway. It was 2 hours to walk around the walls of the old city. And so we had to stop for refreshments in the harbor. And an old galleon. Don't know what it was or where it was from. Oh, there's the Canadian bear. Oh, we're going back to Croatia. This was one of the churches that was bombed, and the international community, it's a Catholic church that is, it's being fixed by the international community. These Lipizzana Zena, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, horses are very famous in the world, and they come from this small town near Osijek in Croatia. And this is the memorial of the broken heart in Croatia after the war, and how the community was so badly divided. Oh, this is the entrance to the hospital. This, maybe you saw some people saw this on the news. This is the water tower in Verkovich, which was heavily bombed, and there was sniper fire from this point too. So there was a reporter apparently up there when sniper fire was happening. Somebody said there's a YouTube clip on this tower, and I've never seen it. I didn't have time to do that. And that's part of the memorial to the people who were killed in the fields. Oh, and there's more of the bees back in Belgrade, Autokrat. And now we're in Tito's museum, Tito's burial grounds in Sarajevo, Ostrog, the church built into the mountain, yeah. And now this is the view from in Kotor, from our room, yeah, out into the old streets. Dubrovnik and the streets, the places where you have to climb thousands of stairs. This is the Dubrovnik area. Okay, I guess that's it.